Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Eastlake Sports. It is Sunday morning, January the 11th, 2015. And this is Eastlake Sports, round 118. We are airing on Sports Jam Network. To find the show online, you can find us at ELS, hashtag ELS. You can call the show at 646-716-6359. And you can follow us online on Twitter, on social networking. My partner, Andrew Marchetti, at ArchieMoses24. You can find me, Craig Goldberger, on Twitter, at 4_TheGolden1. That's the number one. And be sure to check us at our Eastlake Sports Facebook fan page, as well as past and future podcasts on iTunes. And hang with us for the end of the show. We'll be doing our Players of the Week and our Divisional Round Sunday game picks as we... That's what we do. And without further ado, Andrew Marchetti. How you doing, bud? Good morning.
What's up, partner? Good morning. Hey, what song was that you just played? I couldn't figure it out.
That's a band called The XX. Most of their music is, not most of it.
Like the letters X?
The two letters X next to each other. XX.
I've heard of it.
And their music, it has like an instrumental component to it. I love it. It's very not soothing, but it's like ambient. It's almost like ambient noise.
Okay.
But it's soothing to the ear. So I feel like it's thoroughly. It's got a good beat to it. So that's what we chose today, Andrew.
No, I liked it. I liked the beat to it. It actually, in the very beginning, it sounded very, very faintly like a quick Limp Bizkit song from the beginning of, oh my God, it's years ago. Remember that song?
I think it has a combination of a few of that going on, which I think is what originally caught my ear with it, to be honest.
Yeah, it's like a steel drum or something like that. It's a cool sound, though. What's going on, brother? How are we doing today?
They actually have some other good songs, by the way. It's like similar in nature, too. It's not just actually a one-hit thing, and actually their name is relatively known, other than you, of course. Just kidding. What's going
on?
It's 8 in the morning, and we're getting... Earlier today, we're doing that because you are living out your dreams in the flag football gridiron,
yes,
if you will, and I don't mind the early morning show every now and again, and we've got plenty to discuss. I've had a full page of notes for about 2 or 3 days now, although I did account for sub to a certain degree what would be happening or roundabout. But nonetheless, we got plenty to discuss. There's been a lot of activity around the NBA in terms of movement. There was some Hall of Fame announcements this week. We had a major sports athlete check into drug rehab. We haven't really discussed the hockey much, but maybe at some point we're going to have to discuss this certain New York team. Actually, there's two of them that are playing well, but... there's obviously no place we should begin other than the NFL playoffs. The first day of the divisional round took place yesterday, and as someone on this phone, accurately predicted, I got a couple right, Andrew, but someone, along with his Jet fan sister, have not learned their lesson.
Don't even tell me that game wasn't going the way it should have went. And obviously, Joe Flacco and the Ravens came out in a storm. I couldn't believe it was 14-0 in a blink of an eye. I missed the first touchdown. I missed the first, 15 minutes of game. Well, 10 minutes of game, actually, in the first quarter, being stuck at work or whatnot. But, yeah, man, it's annoying that Brady keeps winning, keeps advancing. I really had a pretty good feeling because he didn't look right in the beginning of the game. He just looked like – I don't know if he was, super cold or just mentally wasn't in it, but – they got off to a really bad start, and you know what? It doesn't even matter with these Patriots. It doesn't seem like anything you could do to knock them off their stride at home. They're just dominant. It's unreal. It's sickening in a way. It's absolutely sickening to have to keep talking about Tom Brady and the New England Patriots every January into February. I'm getting sick of it. I wish he would retire already.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen his interviews lately, but he doesn't sound like he has any intention of retiring anytime soon.
Yeah, no, he's not going anywhere. And he came out to, I forget what music he came out to yesterday. They were coming out of the tunnel, and he was like headbutting guys without his helmet on and stuff. I mean, I love all that. I just hate the Patriots, man. Ugh.
Well, let's talk about that. At the beginning of the game, I mean, if you listen to anyone speak in reference to any sort of, I feel like I heard this most recently when I was watching UFC, and they were talking about like going into a fight. Like, are they still nervous? I forget who they were interviewing, and I just feel like I agree with you. There was something off with Brady, and I didn't catch the game seamlessly. It was intermittent, but I was being able to catch chunks of the game at the time. But he definitely looked off, I think would be the word. Not, and I don't mean off on his targets and stuff like that, although that was part of it. I just mean off. Like, he was nervous, getting rid of butterflies. Whatever was happening at the beginning of the game, something was happening physiologically to him that wasn't helping his performance. But once he figured it out, which, of course, he was going to do, I think you just said it. You nailed it on the head, Andrew. The game went exactly as it was supposed to. I never said it was close game. I thought that game was going to be close. I thought Baltimore was going to have a shot to win. But in the end, the game was being played in Foxborough, and you don't beat that team in that place this time of year. So good luck to whoever wins today, because it ain't going to matter as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and you know what, man? To be down twice by 14 points, start the game down 14-0, and then later on in the game, they were down another 14 points, only to have Brady drive them back and then tie the game up with 28 late in the third quarter and just take over. And you're right, man. It's just, and I know it. It just, I kind of felt something different. The Ravens had their number two the last three times they've went to Foxborough in the postseason. I still think Joe Flacco played an amazing game yesterday. I mean, the guy whose percentage was off the roof, off the charts in the beginning of the game. He had four touchdowns in the first two and a half quarters. It was just, it was insane what was going on with them. And it is kind of sad to see them lose the way they did. They definitely played well enough to win that game on multiple occasions. Just certain things just didn't go their way. And you got to give credit to the Patriots, man. I mean, they put together a game plan, and nobody in the NFL changes schemes and figures things out at halftime like the Patriots do. They don't have the same game plan from halftime that they do from the beginning of the game, obviously, you know, however it plays out and whatnot. So you got to give them a lot of credit for that, too. Nobody adjusts better on the fly than the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine. My bad.
There you go.
It's funny to be a Jet fan on a day like today, where everyone wants to discuss, for the most part, the Patriots. The only person who doesn't want to discuss the Patriots is apparently John Harbaugh. I haven't read the article, but something about the Patriots running illegal plays. That's just nonsense. I don't know what he's talking about. I almost don't even care to read the article, because I honestly think these sorts of things shouldn't be mentioned after a game. It just sounds like being a sore loser. But the fact is, a microcosm of the difference between Tom Brady and Joe Flacco happened at the end of that game, when Joe Flacco, who was pitching, was doing the equivalent of pitching, you know, an eight inning gem, at the very end of the game, threw an interception when they obviously could ill afford it because there's no time left on the clock, and they were in scoring position. I mean, they were right there. And the difference between him and Tom Brady is, just a 2 or 3 minutes of game time before that, Tom Brady got it done, virtually hitting LaFell in double coverage in the breadbasket somehow. I don't even know how the ball got in there. Versus a quarterback trying to do the same and inevitably ending in a turnover. That's the difference between Joe Flacco and Tom Brady right there. And for whether you're a Jets fan or otherwise, or just a Tom Brady hater, that's what he is. is what you said yesterday. He's a guy that he's unflappable. Even when he seemed to be flappable at the beginning of the game, it didn't matter. Because it's, until the clock expires, it's irrelevant. They're going to come from behind, and they're going to recapture the lead at some point.
Yeah, enough and nothing. I mean, the Ravens have been very familiar with how to play Brady. They hit Brady plenty of times yesterday. I mean, I know they only registered two official sacks on him, but he was pressured and hurried many, many times, and you know that's usually the MO to get to him. And it was working for a while, but that, like you just said, it's just too much credit to what the Patriots are about and what they do. And Tom Brady himself, man. And also, you know what a big part of that game is? And for this team from this year is having Gronkowski back 100%. There is nobody that can cover that guy one-on-one. Man coverage, even when you have double coverage, it seems like if Brady throws it up, he's coming down with it. The guy is just irreplaceable, and he is probably one of the best targets Tom Brady's ever had in his career as far as the even tight end, wide receiver, I don't care what it is. So having a healthy Gronkowski, a full healthy Gronkowski back, I mean, is making dividends for this team like night and day.
Which I don't know if you ever given thought, but I kind of wondered if that ultimately was something that they ever thought about. Was the last, I think it was two seasons, he was not there during playoffs because of injury. And in the interviews that they were showing yesterday on the pregame stuff, Tom Brady even made mention to it that they haven't had him this time of year in a while and that he was the most excited of anyone. And I agree to your point. I think he actually is the best weapon he's ever had. He, in my opinion, is, at his position, has the biggest gap between him and the next guy in this league. He is, to me, like, you know, to make the reference to Major League Baseball closers, you know, for a top, but even though this is more seasonal, I wouldn't say it's more seasonal, it's more time period, where Rivera was the best by far his position for so long in that position in baseball. I think this guy is the same thing in football at the position of tight end. And he's not just a receiving tight end either, which is something I don't think people give him credit for at all, is he can block, and he's a willing blocker.
I was just going to say, he enjoys to block, actually.
Willing, yeah. Yeah, he's looking to knock your head off. And I could literally do a two. I could do a two-hour show. Which, by the way, we're not doing a two-hour show. For those out there today, we'll be off somewhere around 9:30, 9:45. But we'll give you everything we got today. And I could literally sit here for as long as we are on air and discuss this game or this team, because it is just amazing. And I got to be honest with you, I did pick the Seahawks to win the Super Bowl, and I'm not changing that. And I'm not going to say it could go. I'm not going to say it's going to go otherwise. But I'm going to say it could. I think for the first time in a few years, I think that this Patriots team has the right pieces of the puzzle, and they're healthy, as we were just alluding to actually get the job done, where in the last few years they could get close, but they couldn't get it done. I think this year's a little bit different.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with you on that. And that defense seems to be one of the more stronger defenses that this team has had in making a championship run in many years that I can remember. That's why it was so mind-boggling for them to get off to that 14-0 of going down 14-0 early yesterday, because it was kind of like everything was going wrong. And you just noticed none of them panicked. Everybody was like, all right, no big deal. You know, mere bag of shells, we're down 14 points. It's first quarter, no problem. And you saw it. That's just part of experience and having a great coaching staff and a great game plan and having the players that you're able to do that and execute from. So I just can't give enough credit to them. As much as I hate to admit it and to give credit where credit is due for them, I can't say enough good things about the Patriots this morning. Period, end of story. I'm done with them.
I mean, it's crazy to me. I mean, I'm kind of almost saying this from my Giants fanness. It is, and I made reference to this earlier in the year and early in the NFL year, and definitely on the show at some point, or maybe even a few shows. But it's so frustrating that there's no in between for the Giants.
What do you mean?
Not that I like. But I certainly don't like polar extremes all the time. Meaning, it's for the Giants, it's, or feast or famine. Another way to say it, it's like Super Bowl or bust. Which, if you're a Jets fan, and I'm not saying this to be, I'm being just very candid right now. I'm not saying this to be insulting, a joke. I'm too early for my brain to be witty and sarcastic. If I was a Jets fan, I'd be envious of even the Giants situation, because at least they've climb the mountaintop a couple of times, but in between those times climbing the mountaintop, it's some tough times. Like right now, it's tough, and it is fascinating to me that for approximately 14 years or so now, whatever it's been, for since Belichick's been in New England, 15 years, something around about, this team is competitive every single year, even including the year that they didn't make the playoffs, but they did finish 11-5 without Tom Terrific.
Yeah. And the last point I want to make about the game, Craig, the last quick point I want to make about the game, usually this time of year, the team that can run the ball and play stout defense has the most success and, you know, more of a balanced attack. New England had 14 total rushing yards yesterday to 136 from Baltimore, and yet they still won this game. So right there alone, not one of their rushes had more than 8 yards total on the ground. Like, they just abandoned the running game. I don't even know. Because, like I just said, you know, running the football and playing defense late in this time of year is the blueprint for a championship. I don't even know if New England needs to run the football at all. They're so good that I don't even think they need to have a running game. That's how good they are.
Well, here I'm not going to go too much further with this, but a couple points I wanted to make were kind of to play into this. A particular player in particular. And yeah, you're absolutely right. They had no running game to speak of. And I was actually saying to someone when we were watching at the end of the fourth quarter kind of unfold, is when they were driving before he threw the touchdown to LaFell.
Yes.
I think it was right before he threw the touchdown to
LaFell.
You know, but I'm saying that was the last one, correct?
I'll tell you right now. The fell was the last one, yeah.
Okay, and so I'm watching and I'm saying, oh, this is what I was thinking of. It is when the fourth down play came up and they got the completion to Owen Daniels.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm thinking to myself at that point if they would be able with stops to get the ball back. And what I was thinking was that they had a better shot if they ultimately gave up the ball there to New England and were able to get stops. But I was thinking, would New England be helping them sort of by not running the ball, because they hadn't had any running game for the whole game to speak of. Meaning, if they're throwing the ball and they're throwing incomplete passes, it stops the clock. That's good. That's advantage Ravens.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And
yeah,
I was wondering
if that
would ultimately happen. And obviously, it never happened because he threw a pick. You know, a couple plays later, not enough clock was left at that point. But anyway, the point I wanted to make about a running back was I was thinking before the game, and it's funny how things unfolded during the game. You know, how you and I were discussing FanDuel and fantasy and stuff yesterday. I mean, we were discussing, you had mentioned specifically LeGarrette Blount. I was thinking to myself, like, how amazing is the events that led to him? If you remember the explosive nature of him arriving in New England at the end of last season, the huge games he had, I want to say... I don't remember who it was in the playoffs last year, but there was one game in the playoffs. I think it was this round last year in the playoffs where he went crazy. Like, in fantasy, he had, like, the equivalent of, like, 40 points. I think he had, like, 3 or 4 touchdowns that game. And then the events that led to him even getting back there, you know, he left the team for, I don't know why they didn't re-sign him, but he left to end playing in Pittsburgh this season, acted like a total baby and went to the locker room prematurely. Got cut, got his way, ended up back in New England, gets handed the job immediately. And what I'm thinking yesterday after, or kind of during and after you and I had spoken, was he was great last year, but if you remember, I think it was the Denver game, he did nothing that game.
Yeah.
In the AFC Championship, he did nothing. Well, yeah, well, that's exactly what game it was Denver 1. He did nothing. He had like less than 10 yards rushing. They went, I think it was 5 carries for 10 yards. They gave him a bunch of carries early. He got stuffed. And it's funny how things work out, because the same thing happened yesterday. He got stuffed early and didn't look good doing it, and he stopped getting the rock.
Wow.
I found that whole sequence of events to be just interesting, given how good that team is and how important he could be to them. How he's another guy. He's feast or famine. He's either playing well and jumping over people and hurtling down the field, or he's going nowhere. And to your point about the running game, is their short passing game is so good to Edelman, Amendola, Vereen, Gronkowski, to any of the just the long passing game is fine also, but specifically the short passing game, that it does kind of overcome their running woes from time to time.
Yeah, that's a good point. Having a short passing game is kind of like running the ball, obviously. When you were just talking, they had some breaking news come in. Looks like Rex Ryan is the new head coach of the Buffalo Bills.
What?
Yeah. I don't understand why he would do that.
That's a little bit of a surprise.
Well, I saw yesterday, I read an article, they called him back in for a second interview, which you don't usually hear too often. And I was like, huh, why would he go to Buffalo? But he's going to Buffalo Bills as the head coach, not defensive coordinator.
And I don't know, I was actually going to bring up today, I'll get back to it. Just to finish this thought,
sure.
And then we'll go right back to that. And then there's a whole bunch of other stuff in the NFL I want to discuss, and I want to get to the other game also.
That's so crazy, though. Jesus.
So I found out those events with the Garrett Blount to be interesting, and you look at their team, and it amazed me yesterday. And even in the playoffs, Bill Belichick is so unpredictable. You know, we discuss fantasy on this show all the time, and you can do everything right and try and figure out what's and it didn't matter because he didn't do anything, but it was just a point that he was even out there. Early in the game, I'm looking at the TV thinking, what in God's name is Brandon Bolden doing on the field right now? I mean, if you thought it'd be anyone else other than LeGarrette Blount, I would imagine it would be Jonas Gray. But Brandon Bolden, who hasn't been seen for weeks, makes an appearance and, like, was on there for multiple series. I'm like, what is happening here? Like, Bill Belichick is masterful in his usage of guys and literally leaving everyone guessing. No one knows what they're going to do and who they're going to do it with. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and it just seems like, you know, somebody doesn't perform at that spot, the next guy up, and he steps up, and that's usually the guy that stands out for them no matter who it is. And I think Jonas Gray was actually inactive yesterday with his knee injury. It baffles me how they do it all the time. Just the next man steps up, and that's the guy. Just seems like they always have somebody to fill in to fit a certain position due to an injury or lack of play or something like that. I've never seen anything like that before, the consistency in how they do it.
And by the way, if you were to read Jonas Gray's quotes from earlier this week, it did not sound like a guy who was not planning on playing. So maybe something happened there we don't know about. He was taking first-team reps with LeGarrette Blount during the week. That's interesting news. But I didn't put all that together. I'm glad I brought it up. To your point, by the way, the next man up, I mean, how about Danny Amendola the last couple of weeks?
He's finally stepped up a little bit, being healthy, and Brady seems to have a little bit more trust with him than he used to.
So there's their other quarterback, their receiver, number 11, Julian Edelman. That play was ridiculous. that was insane. You don't see that often, that sort of play work. It either ran, you know, to run, even run the play at all, but even for it to work that well.
You never see the Patriots do plays like that, let alone, you know, just regular trickery in that kind of situation. But everything was perfect. I mean, Baltimore bid on it. They were picking on that rookie corner, number 39 or 38, whatever his name was. And the throw, Edelman's throw, I mean, that was a freaking laser. He threw a nice tight spiral.
Edelman was, for those that don't know, was a quarterback in college. He's a converted quarterback to a receiver, which makes his rise to being maybe, I don't know, second or third tier worth of quality receivers in the NFL, meaning like if you take the upper echelon guys, then maybe the next group after that is somewhere where he falls. To go from playing quarterback in college to that level of success at another position, totally different position in the NFL, is not something you see all the time. You see a lot of quarterbacks come in and do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, but he's made a full transition to another position and done it well. And I think watching Wes Welker do it, actually, he learned a ton in that process.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah, definitely. No doubt about that. And what a time to have your first career NFL touchdown pass for Edelman in a postseason game late in the third quarter to tie the game back up again at 28 before New England wound up going ahead for sure for the end of the game.
And before we move on, was there any moment watching that game, any moment that you didn't think the Patriots – maybe let's put this another way. After the Patriots got back into the game, you know, after the first, let's say, half of the first quarter or the second quarter or so, was there any doubt in your mind that the Patriots would win the game? Because to me, the score was literally irrelevant. It was just a matter of waiting until the clock expired for it to be official that the Patriots were moving on. That's how I viewed it.
Yeah, after Gronk scored that touchdown in the third quarter, midway through, I think they made it to it. They were down 14. Let me look at the box score. Yeah, it made it 28-21. Right from that point, you just kind of felt something changing in the stadium there with everything, and it just seemed like everything was kind of leaning towards going right for New England itself. And they wound up getting the ball back pretty quick because Baltimore went three and out, and that's when Edelman hit Amendola for that pass on that next drive, and that's when they tied it up. But after that ground touchdown, before the Amendola pass, I kind of felt like they're not losing this game. Like, this is ridiculous. It's going to happen again. Tom Brady's going to win, and we're going to see them in the championship game. That's when it really hit me. Because up until then, I really thought Baltimore was in control. Even though New England was coming back a little bit and doing it, Baltimore seemed to be doing whatever they want to do with success. And Flacco, how could you not tell me Flacco wasn't playing? I'm not saying you didn't. I'm just saying, how could you not say Flacco was not playing to win that game? I mean, he was doing everything right. He didn't make a mistake. He didn't throw a pick until late in the third quarter itself. But, I mean, his game was just perfect.
You know, I forgot to mention it before when you had brought up Flacco early at the very beginning of the show. I've seen that statistic like three times over this weekend, and I wish I remember it exactly, but it's something round about it now holds the most consecutive, I guess, playoff games of two touchdowns or more. I think the number is eight. Eight consecutive games with two touchdowns or more. I think next on the list is Montana, and then there's a couple other big names. And it's amazing that he's the sole holder of that that record at this point. And obviously it doesn't guarantee victory for sure or anything like that, but it does speak to how good and reliable this guy Joe Flacco has become as an NFL quarterback.
Yeah, you said that a mouthful. And then, this year he was six touchdowns, two interceptions. Last year, his postseason, 2012, 11 and none. And the year before that, 4-1. So, I mean, 21 touchdowns to three picks in his last three postseasons, and one of those obviously was that championship run right to the Super Bowl. He's really starting to find form and gain confidence and know that he could actually perform big and play under, pressure situations on the road in a postseason game and have success. I mean, that bodes well for him. And I was never a Flacco fan to begin with. You know that, especially when he signed that big deal. I was like, what are they doing? Whatever the Ravens are smoking over there, I want to try some of it. But, man, it worked out for them. I mean, I'll never say another bad thing about Flacco again when it comes to postseason. Guys earned my respect.
Yeah, I mean, it was very impressive. But, again, the unfortunate part is he is Joe Flacco. And Joe Flacco is pretty good. Joe Flacco is not Tom Brady. Tom Brady is. And that really was ultimately the difference in the game. That's how close that game was. I very much thought it would be a close game. I probably could have predicted a closer score, given my score had nothing to do with the line, and it probably should have been, because I would have had Baltimore, because I expect that game to be close. We had mentioned that. That's the one team that stood a chance at winning in that stadium at this time of year, and they're no longer in the playoffs. So good luck to Peyton Manning or Andrew Luck, wherever he gets there next. That being said, playing in Arizona could be another issue. Altogether, we'll see how that all shakes out, and we'll obviously discuss that in the coming weeks. But moving on. So I want to move over to the other game. This is how I'm going to do it. So I was watching yesterday some of the pregame stuff. I don't often watch pregames. I'm so crazed about fantasy, in case you haven't figured that one out yet. I don't know if anyone listening to the show has figured out that we like to talk fantasy. And so I usually watch that stuff, but I don't usually genuinely just watch the pregame anymore. And I was thinking to myself that there's no one better for my money for all these years watching pregame stuff than Chris Berman and Tom Jackson. They're the best duo talking football, as far as I'm concerned, that there's ever been. And then they make their game picks at the end of the pregame show, all the guys on the panel. And every time the panel picks one way, it usually gets to Berman, and Berman goes, so you're all on the whatever team, and he'll take the opposite team. And so every one of them was on the Seahawks, and when it got to him, sometimes he'll even do it jokingly, so you're all on the Seahawks, I'm going to take the Panthers. And he didn't even do the whole thing. He just said, yeah, come on, take the Seahawks. And I just found that to be terribly amusing, but so true and so indicative of how good this Seattle Seahawks team is and how, in my opinion, they are as close to a team that has in recent history that's very capable of repeating more so than any other.
And what really makes me laugh is, you know, back in week 7 when they were 3-3, a lot of people were writing them off saying, what's wrong with the Seattle team? They were having internal issues in the locker room, the whole Percy Harvin situation. You know, this guy said this. They were trying to say that there were certain media reports that were coming from the locker room that were trying to cause turmoil amongst them. And look what happened. Here we are, 9-10 weeks later, and this team is definitely looking like last year's team, maybe even a little bit better with that defense. They were impressive yesterday, man. I mean, they executed it, and if I'm an NFL player, any one of these teams, man, and you see this you see the tape of Seattle defense and how they go out and hit, I'd be a little nervous to get hit by these guys. These guys hit like they want to end your career. All legally in the system, it's just they hit with total brunt force. It's unbelievable. And they swarm to the ball. You know, it's once one guy gets there, the next thing you know, you look around, there's four other Seahawks behind you. Their speed, their closing speed is just ridiculous. It's like no other team that I've seen. All on the defensive side of that ball. Don't even get me started on Russell Wilson. That guy is becoming my new favorite player of all time. He's unbelievable what he's able to do, especially by keeping plays alive with his feet. It's just a lot of fun to watch, man. They are just dominant.
Yeah, they are dominant. For as good of a season as I think, it's interesting. I mean, Drew, do we make official Super Bowl picks or no? We did, right?
Not yet. I don't know. I didn't have it on my paper. I couldn't find it. I think I threw out the wrong paper on mistake. But you had it on yours, you said.
I'm saying even recently, do we do Super Bowl picks or no? I don't know, but I told you.
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay, so I told you I did this whole playoff bracket. You know, you pick a you pick the whole bracket. If you get it 100% right, then you're thrown into a pool with whoever's finished it, you know, whoever's also completed a perfect bracket. And it was totally free, and you can win $5,000. It's pretty cool. So after yesterday, there's 4,700 people left with a perfect bracket. So the number's getting there. I think today will change things. But here's my point, meaning I think today's going to weed out. That number's going to be at least half today, because I think the Green Bay Dallas, which on here is showing 61-39% split, meaning 61% people have Green Bay winning and 39% have Dallas. That's the closest of any of the four divisional round games. The rest of them are weighted way more towards the favorite. So I think that's going to change a lot today. But the point is, I almost don't think it matters who wins in Green Bay today. It's not to say that they don't have a chance. The way you win in the NFL this time of year and just win in the NFL is run the ball, play great defense, don't turn the ball over at the quarterback position and make great plays at the quarterback position. The Seahawks have all of that. They have all that in droves. And I just can't see either. I know Dallas beat them earlier in the year, and I know they're 8-0 on the road going into Green Bay today, by the way, this year, Dallas. I just don't see Dallas, if they win, going into Seattle and winning. And I don't see Green Bay going into – I mean – Green Bay has looked terrible on the road in the first place. It's not going to get better in Seattle.
I think it matters,
is my point.
As a two of those teams, you know, I think Green Bay would probably have the better chance. I know what happened in week 1 when they went there and they got destroyed in Seattle to open the season. But and I know Dallas went there, obviously, and shocked the world, so to speak, and beat them on their turf. But I just think if you had to rematch both of these games, I think the losing team, which was Green Bay from week 1, would have a better opportunity, a better chance. Just prepping for them, just knowing it. Obviously, with Dallas, they had – I think just everything was going right for them. I was explaining – it's tough for me to explain right now, but I was explaining it that week, the week after, obviously. It's just like one of those seasons where you're not used to seeing this from them, and it's just – you kind of knew that was going to happen that week. They were going to go up there and win the way it's set up with everything. I don't see them having any chance in hell going back up there this late in the season. Even with that team that they did – even with the offense that they did with – that prior week when they went up there, DeMarco Murray, I think, would have a pedestrian game running the football. And Tony Romo, I think, would be running for his life all game. The way they pressured last night with Cam Newton, who's a running quarterback, mind you, and got to him so often, I can only imagine what would happen with Tony Romo.
Well, I'll say this. There is a slight difference on the offensive lines of Carolina and Dallas.
Definitely.
But that being said, I still think that it's the way Romo's back has been, although it's looked better, obviously, with a little more rest of late, it's not going to be much better today playing in frigid temperatures in Green Bay. And if they do get past, he will be on the run. And he could get hurt in that game. And I'm not saying that because that's what I hope. I'm saying that because that's actually the reality of it. But yeah, I don't give either one of these teams a chance. And so my point and where I started was, I see this is going the same way it did yesterday is going to be how it goes next week. Meaning New England will come out the winner, Seattle will come out the winner. They will defend their home turf and they will be playing in Arizona. And then we'll see what it's all about. I look at these two teams as not unstoppable by any stretch, but they're as good as it gets right now in their respective divisions or conferences.
Without a doubt. And I see the same exact thing. As of right now, I can't see any team that's left in the postseason. Even the guys that have played today can go and beat Seattle. I just can't see that happening with the way that defense is playing. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, and also in the AFC, I don't see the winner of that game going into New England and winning. I don't see it. And it's amazing.
Even if it's Manning?
Especially if it's Manning.
Well, all right.
If it's Manning. I would give, Peyton Manning, his age in his arm shows when it gets very cold this time of year.
He plays in a colder place, in a colder climate in Colorado than it is in New England. It's much colder in Colorado. He's used to playing in cold.
You know what? It is and it isn't. It's the air is weird in Denver. You know, you can get the way the sun falls that you can get color in the winter there when the temperatures are up a little bit. I mean, not like crazy times, but like in the so let's say 60s. It's a little bit different, and as you've noticed in even recent weeks, as we've gotten into the winter, his throws haven't looked exactly great lately. Which, by the way, neither did Tony Romo's last week. I don't know what the heck was wrong with Tony Romo for the first half of that game against Detroit, but everything being slung off of his shoulder was nosediving and turning into a duck. I don't know what the heck was wrong with him last week for a little bit. It was weird to watch. Like I was just, what is wrong with him? You know what I'm talking about against Detroit?
I just think the pressure of the defense, or just knowing that defense, I think he was thinking a little bit too quick and reacting too quick before the pressure was actually even there. He did adjust though and get used to it. I mean, that's just credit to, Detroit's defense and knowing that they're there. That's why he's just trying to be protective of that. But yeah, definitely, he was definitely throwing duds all early. But like I said, I credit that kind of to the defense and knowing, what they could do.
Yeah, so yesterday I predicted a total drubbing of Carolina, which I know the score shows a 2-touchdown victory, but it seemed like more, specifically in the second half. I can't say enough about that team and their prospects for what will happen in the next few weeks. Just real quickly, though, Drew, you and I discussed some fantasy implications yesterday on a couple of different levels. Just wanted to make quick mention. Number one is I think I got it right by choosing Gronkowski and Vereen for this week because Marshawn Lynch had a relatively low-key game yesterday, which worked out well for the strategy I was employing. Definitely got more points from Vereen and Gronkowski than I would have with Olsen and Lynch. To the other point, Jermaine Kearse, man. I mean, he was hurt for a couple weeks, and he came back with a vengeance.
Yeah, he did, and he looked really good.
I mean,
too.
When I saw he had the big touchdown, and I saw it was him, I was like, good Lord. I mean, I considered making all the moves yesterday, and he would have been part of it, and so would have Lynch, would have been in there. Maybe it may have ended up being Richardson, but I don't know, man. I'm going to have to make the move probably after next week. And I don't know. You still feel like Richardson's the way to go? I feel like it's got to be Kearse now, no?
Well, after seeing Kearse yesterday and seeing he's 100% healthy, that was my biggest concern when I was talking. That's why I said I think I would lean towards Paul Richardson. And plus, it seemed like Wilson had a nice little rapport saw and I trust Richardson a little bit more. That kid's pretty fast, too. He took a hell of a shot yesterday, though, and got hurt, but finally he was okay. But, yeah, I think I would stick with Kurz, too, after seeing what I saw yesterday. I mean, I know it was only three catches, but he had a 129 and a touchdown, and one of those three catches was a huge catch on a third down early in the game that Russell Wilson threw a little bit high, that he climbed that ladder and made a big play on that. So it's not just about scoring touchdowns. He does a lot of intangibles, too, with that big frame, Jermaine Kurz getting open and being a big third down target. So that's huge for Wilson in that offense.
And there's certainly life after Percy Harvin in Seattle. That's for
you
sure.
Think? Yeah.
There's only so good their receivers need to be in the first place, for the record. And I think they have that in the guys they have. And also no Golden Tate. I mean, Golden Tate was part of this last year also.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty amazing that this team feels as good, if not better, than the team that played last year.
Yeah, it's just amazing how they have guys that are just no household names as far as number one receivers, and yet they're very efficient on offense. And a lot of that credit, it has to go to Russell Wilson. Like I said earlier, he keeps a lot of plays alive with his legs. It's just unreal the way he scrambles and is able to have the defenders lose those wide receivers and make a quick throw and get a good pass off. So it's impressive to see him do that consistently, Russell Wilson, with his little 5'9 body running around back there amongst giants. It's unreal.
So moving into today's games a little bit and some other news, I'll get to Rex in just a few minutes. I wanted your opinion on the unfortunate set of circumstances with that flag in the Detroit-Dallas game last week. Just kind of curious your two cents on that.
Well, it definitely seemed to me like it was pass interference, and that the what got me
based on
was
what. I'm curious. You and I play football, so
right.
And you think it was face guarding?
Well, the defender never turned around for the ball to make a play on the ball, and you saw the receiver trying to reach his hands out to get it, but he was being blocked. Pettigrew was being blocked because the defender's back was to the quarterback, and you're supposed to turn around and make a play on the ball. That never happened, and there was contact prior to the ball being thrown there. So, what gets me though is they actually threw the penalty, they called pass interference, then they got together and said, "No, we're going to call it off." What I was more surprised about was that Dez Bryant didn't get the flag for being on the field, 15 yards on the field, when the defense was on for the Cowboys. That I was more surprised about than everything with the whole flag situation, because that we all know, you're not supposed to come on the field, especially without your helmet on, and especially when the defense is on the field and you're an offensive player. He should have been flagged for that. That was wrong right there. That I don't know how they got away with it. I'm more upset with that part of it than with the whole flag, being picked up and then whatnot.
Yeah, my whole thing on the way that all shook out is there probably should have been a defensive hold before the sequence of events that took, before the sequence that resulted in the flag even happened.
Correct.
I disagree a little bit that he didn't make a play on the ball. I think right when his left arm went up to go knock it down at the very last second, I know he didn't make eye contact because his head never got all the way around, but it does look like it started to come around looking for the ball. And for me, I didn't hear anything. But for me, I'm okay with that not being called pass interference, given everything that is called these days. I think it was a very good football play. That being said, there was a holding that took place just before it, and the flag just should have never been thrown. Once it was thrown, it certainly shouldn't have been picked up because something was wrong in the entirety of the play. Something went wrong that should have been flagged. And to pick up the flag, I'm not going to say that was why Dallas won the game. I don't believe that, but it certainly didn't hurt their cause.
No, and I won't say that either because you never know what could have happened. Obviously, you can't say Detroit would have won that game and whatnot, but that would have been first down. They would have been on the 29-yard line, on Dallas's 29. They were up three, and they would have been in field goal range there. So, they could have put more pressure on the Dallas by, even if they would have just got a chip shot field goal to go up three, then they would have ate some more clock up so that Dallas wouldn't have had the time they had when they got the ball back. So a lot of things you could say change the outcome because of that call itself. But like I said to you, Craig, even if I'm okay with them picking it up and not calling and whatnot and what have you, but the whole thing with Dez Bryant, aren't you surprised that they didn't throw a flag on that? That's unsportsmanlike conduct. You're not supposed to come on the field. That was the most obvious part of that whole play right there. That was the most obvious infraction. For them to not call that, I think was just blatantly ridiculous. There was I never heard an explanation for that either.
You're absolutely right, and I don't know what to make of it. Unfortunately, Detroit, who by all accounts played a really good game last week.
Yeah, they did.
Specifically, the first half was ridiculous, and as you and I had discussed, you know, how good they were in the fourth quarter in many games this year. The way the game was unfolding, before I misspeak, whatever, I'll leave that one alone. But
I misspeak all the time. It's all good.
Yeah, I know. by the fourth quarter, you know, a lot of times in the regular season, they would be coming from behind. In this scenario, they were trying to protect the lead. And ultimately, they couldn't. I suppose, you know, that obviously that call helped along the way. But I guess my point is, it was different during the season when they were coming from behind the fourth quarter. The sense of urgency was a little bit different, whereas here, you know, they had the lead for almost the entirety of the entire game. So, but nonetheless, man, here we are. It's Sunday. We're a little short on time, so I just feel like we should move this forward. And in approximately 5 hours or so, we will be watching the Dallas Cowboys play the Green Bay Packers. It's going to be cold up there.
Very cold.
The main key point or whatever about what's going to ultimately determine the winner of that game today?
Simple for me. Aaron Rodgers' health. Is he 100% healthy with that calf issue? You're hearing it's a tear, it's a slight tear, it's a slight strain. Well, what is it? You know, and I know they're not going to say exactly what it is. You don't want to give your opponent, you know, any kind of information or whatnot going forward. But they're not stupid. They know he's injured. They know he hurt his calf. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing today, because if Aaron Rodgers isn't the Aaron Rodgers that we all know and love, even though they're up in Green Bay, they're not going to have a chance today. You know, I just don't see that happening. He's got to be 100% healthy and be able to move and be elusive like he is to roll out of the pocket and whatnot. And if he's limited in any way or at all, that's going to be trouble. And I really think that Green Bay needs to get off to a really good start running the ball, establishing the run with Lacy early on, tire up that front four for Dallas. That's the one strength on their defense. They're much better with their front four than they are in their secondary. So if you could establish that running game, tie those guys out early, Aaron Rodgers could pick apart that secondary, even if they are playing, you know, a three deep or a two deep safety zone or something like that. So it all depends on Aaron Rodgers' health for me today.
Let's assume Aaron Rodgers is healthy. Let's assume that this injury is not as bad as everyone's making it out to be. Quite frankly, I think regardless of how bad the injury may or may not be, I think what you're going to see on the field is going to be the same Aaron Rodgers we're used to seeing, because he'll probably take some sort of pain-killing injection before the game, and he'll be fine out there. That's the way I see it. I could be mistaken, but let's assume that he's healthy. Let's leave that out of the conversation. Assuming full health, you don't have to give me your prediction just yet, but I guess what do you think is going to happen here? Do you think this is going to be like some kind of runaway? Do you think it's going to be a high scoring type of offensive game? What's your outlook, I guess, on the whole game?
It's going to look like the Ravens Patriots game from yesterday in some sort of sense. Maybe a little bit less of the scoring barrage as early as it was. But I think it would be something like that. I think both teams have very potent offenses. They could score. I'm not sold on either one of these teams' defenses. But like I said, I would always give the edge to the home team itself. Green Bay used to be one of the most difficult places to be able to win a game on the road in the postseason. It's been done before in the past, and certain teams feel like, hey, you know, we have a chance. This so-and-so team did it last year or whatnot. So they have that going in for them. But I think that Green Bay itself is just going to establish their dominance. And I'm looking to see them efficient on both sides of the ball, obviously. But like I said, it can be a little high-scoring game, and it could come down to the team with the ball last could be the team that could be the deciding factor of the game. That's how unpredictable it can be with these two teams, because I'm not sold on either defense. But either offense, they can run up and down the field with each other, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that whoever has the ball last is probably going to win the game or something, you know. It's going to be close enough where the last possession will matter in this game. And, you know.
How do you see the scoring? Is it high scoring or?
I expect it to be relatively high scoring.
Okay.
We haven't done our scores yet, but the score is very much in the vicinity of where that game ended up of the score yesterday with Baltimore and New England. So I agree with that statement. It's going to be cold. I don't know what that ultimately. It's not going to be precipitating at all. So I mean, I think you'll have good football. I don't know if it's going to affect the kicking game at all. I mean, I think Crosby's used to that sort of those conditions. Maybe it affects Bailey a little bit, who for the first time looked a little shook last week. For the first time, maybe in his career, he looked a little shook last week when he missed that field goal, which he doesn't miss. I guess the other factor would be DeMarco Murray's cast on his, or whatever he's wearing on his arm at this point, in terms of with the cold weather and how that will, he's got a fumbling issue in the first place, how that will affect it. But, I'm a big, big Dallas Cowboys fan.
I know. And a Romo fan, by the way, too. Don't forget that.
Yeah, I'm an even bigger Romo fan. And so, I'm looking at this game, man, and I think this is the one game today where this round of a team where I think the road team's got a shot. I mean, look, they have not lost on the road this season.
And Green Bay hasn't lost at home either.
And I was just going to say, and you have a team that home field like that plays on their home field like this time of year. It's really like, what's it, the immovable force versus whatever. It's going to be interesting. And I look forward to discussing it to see next week if you think either one of those teams does have a shot over the Seahawks. That being said, over in Denver later in the day, there will be the Indianapolis Colts going to Denver to play Peyton Manning. How do you think this one shakes out? You think this one's high scoring also?
Actually, yeah, I do. I mean, I'm not sold on Indianapolis' defense, and they obviously, we know they don't have a running game, although you and I spoke a lot about Tipton, right? Is that his name? Zerfron Tipton, whatever his name is.
You mentioned Zerlon Tipton.
Zerlon Tipton, yes. Okay, thank you for that. With him and forgive me, the other guy's name?
Dan Heron,
thank you. With those two guys, they're going to need to get off to some kind of running style to be able to take some pressure off of Andrew Luck and give him some time in that pocket. T.Y. Hilton's 100% healthy. Colby Fleener's 100% healthy. I have no doubt in my mind that the Colts are going to put some points up on the board. But is Andrew Luck going to make some mistakes in that game where he's going to throw a pick late or down in the red zone somehow to change the flow of the game itself and maybe put the momentum back in Denver's side? I don't know. But, Denver getting the week off, especially after the beating that Peyton Manning took in that St. Louis game back in week 15 or 16, whatever it was. I know he was a little banged up from them, but anytime you can get a week off, especially for a guy who's up there in age as Peyton, and plus also to practice and get a little bit more 100% on the same page, even Demaryius Thomas should be 100% healthy as well. We know Julius Thomas is playing. Don't know about his health, though. You kind of scared me yesterday in talking about him with the FanDuel, somewhat trying to stay away from him because we just don't know what you're going to get from him being he's been out for so long. And even when he did come back, he only played, I think, one series and then was out the rest of the game in week 17. So that's another match I'm going to be looking to see. But I think Denver can hold on. I do see, like I said, a little higher scoring game. I could definitely see it in the 30s for sure.
I'm sorry, you were referring to Hillman when you were saying that, right?
Hillman. Yeah.
Okay, I was making sure I was following you. Food for thought. Week one, Indianapolis goes to Denver. I'm not looking at the score. I'm looking at a particular guy's stats. I think I'm pretty sure Denver won that game and pretty decisively. T.Y. Hilton, number one receiver for the Colts. 5 catches on 11 targets, 41 yards against, I think it was Aqib Talib. Was the guy covering him, meaning he had a really hard time shaking Denver's defense loose. I wonder what that looks like today. Because they can't win if T.Y. Hilton's bottled up.
Yeah, no, definitely not. And that's why I said, and you know what, Craig? I don't think they can win if they can't run the ball either. You know, they have to have some kind of running game to, you know, offset that Denver defense and those linebackers and be able to give Andrew Luck some kind of presence in the pocket. They have to have some kind of running game, some kind of positive running game today, or else it's just going to be all downhill. You can't throw for four quarters, you know, and you can't get down early either because then you're forced to throw for four quarters. So the beginning of this game, the first quarter, is going to be very pivotal for the Indianapolis Colts, and it should shape up how the rest of the game is going to go.
Yeah, I agree with that also. And another game that should be high scoring and could go back and forth a little bit.
And you know what the problem is? I want to pick the Colts. I like the Colts. I like Andrew Luck. But when you're going up against Peyton Manning and all these offensive weapons in their home territory, it's just tough to go against them. You know, just like you said, it's tough to go against Brady. They just don't lose in Foxborough this time of year. You know, it's not the same thing with Peyton. They do lose there, obviously. But I just find it hard to go against Peyton, even though it's Andrew Luck and them.
I totally agree with you. I feel like at some point he's going to take that next step, Andrew Luck. I don't think I'm not leaning towards it's going to be today. I don't think it'll be today, but at some point, because I think they were there this spot last year, not against Denver, I don't think, but they made the playoffs last year and
right.
And they didn't make it very far. And at some point, he's going to take that next step. I just don't think he's there yet. I think Peyton's got at least another win in him today,
mm-hmm.
and obviously. How I feel about what's going to happen next week. But for this week, I think ultimately, somehow, some way, Denver will prevail with the combination of weapons that they have. I have one other guy I wanted to ask, get your opinion on you think, if you think he'll have an impact at all today. Wes Welker.
No.
Not at all.
No, I think he's better. I mean, he'll have about four or five catches, but they're not going to be. He used to be so big on third down and that's just not the case anymore. You know, obviously, old age is caught up to him and all the concussion history he's had. He's just more of a role player, somewhat of a decoy. I mean, he could definitely help, don't get me wrong, but he's not going to be a guy who's going to make a play that's going to change the outcome of the game today. In my opinion, no.
Okay, well, and the reason I was asking, to be clear, was I just feel like they've had 2 weeks, so he's any concussion issues or other injury issues, he should be good to go. Look
sure.
at that game yesterday with the Patriots and the, I don't call it a breakout game, but definitely a big game from Danny Amendola, which certainly, you know, took me by surprise because I assumed he would take more of a backseat role, but that Edelman was back. Because if you remember, Edelman didn't play the last week or two because of a concussion, so Amendola was getting more reps. I thought he'd be on the back burner a little bit more yesterday, and he certainly, you know, exploded. I think in the slot position that Wes Welker plays, he could play a role today for Peyton. I mean, he can play a role anytime, but he's kind of an X factor for me in this game. I think he could actually make a play that determines the outcome of the game one way or the other, as we've seen in past postseasons.
And the football fan in me, the true football diehard fan in me, is rooting for the Patriots, rooting for the Broncos today because I know it'll be probably one of the last times that we'll ever see, you know, Peyton going to get up against Tom Brady in an AFC Championship game for the winner taking it to the Super Bowl. So that's going to be a real treat for us because it's been awesome watching the two of these go against each other in their careers back and forth battling. It's been Colts-Patriots. Now it's Patriots-Broncos, Patriots, you know, it's whatever it's been, the one mainstay has been Peyton versus Manning. Peyton versus Manning. You see what I'm saying? Peyton versus Brady has been the one mainstay, and I think we'll all be in for a treat if we can get one more matchup with the magnitude that would be on the line for it with these two guys on the horizon of their careers.
That is the one constant, and I definitely think we're going to end up seeing another Brady Manning, unbelievably another Brady Manning next week, and I look forward to it. Actually, and just one more thing, and just to keep this quick, check, you'll see what I wrote to you. But Andrew Luck last week, they beat Cincinnati. Any thoughts on his performance last week?
No, I thought he played pretty well. I mean, pretty efficient itself, and say what you want, but Cincinnati, you know, even though I picked them last week, Cincinnati is just Cincinnati. We are who we thought they were. And I was impressed with Andrew Luck. I thought he did pretty well. I was waiting for an interception to come because, if you remember last year, the last two playoff games, he threw combined seven of them. But I thought he played real efficient, didn't make any real pivotal mistakes to hurt his team. And it gained him a little bit more experience in his career. So I thought he played really all-around well game last week.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact he was using his running back, Dan Heron, in the passing game on the checkdowns made all the difference in the world. That's why he wasn't turning the ball over. Instead of trying to squeeze it in or just, you know, misfire, he was just dumping off. Heron had 10 catches for 85 yards.
That's
a lot of dumping off, but it was efficient, and it worked. And in total, Luck threw for 376. I'm not looking at his rating or anything, but it had to have been high. He threw one touchdown, no picks, and he was 31 of 44. So pretty
impressive.
Solid. Yeah.
And I said to you yesterday, imagine you give Andrew Luck a household or a proven running back to have that kind of balanced running attack, he'd be in another stratosphere.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, I think we're a couple years away from him being spoken about in similar fashion as these other guys. But that being said, we are a few years away from that. So let's give it to grow and we'll see what happens. All right, now let's get back to there's a bunch of other quick topics I want to go through in the NFL and get your thoughts on. But back to Rex. There was speculation that he'd be going to Atlanta and that he would be bringing with him Mark Trestman, which I found interesting. I wonder if Trestman ends up in Buffalo as his offensive coordinator.
That would be a nice match. I'm still a little bit like, why would you go to Buffalo out of all the teams? And it's not a knock on Buffalo, but is it something personal? He wants to play the Jets twice a year now? I mean, what's the deal? I just don't know. They have a nice defense in place. Obviously, they were top five defense this year. Actually, the last 2 years, Buffalo has been a top five, top ten defense. Just the offensive side of the ball. They don't have a quarterback. They drafted E.J. Manuel. We all saw what happened with that. Kyle Orton just retired, so their starting quarterback is now gone. And they don't have a draft pick until, I think, the 15th pick or 14th pick. So that's just an interesting marriage there, so to speak. I'm really curious to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Speaking of coordinators, Dick LeBeau, after many, I don't even know how long he's been with Steelers, he's been there forever, seemingly.
11 years.
How many?
11.
I actually thought it was longer. But
That's what I thought, too, until I saw it.
It feels like longer, but they're parting ways. Thought that was an interesting headline, but I'm not really surprised given how bad Pittsburgh's defense has really been by and large for most of the season and possibly even most of last. Defense definitely has that's something that they need to work on to make that team better.
Yeah, I agree. And he's not retiring. He just resigned, actually, so he could go to another team somewhere.
And I wonder if based on the relationship between the organizations of the Giants and the Steelers, if he ends up getting a look, given that they're in the process of trying to find a new defensive coordinator after relieving Perry Fuel of his post as defensive coordinator, which I'm not surprised about. Is probably not soon enough, to be fair. They're also looking back at Spagnuolo, which is interesting, as well as Buffalo Bills, I think, linebackers coach Pepper Johnson, former New York Giant.
I think LeBeau would be a nice fit, but,
I think so, too. That's why, obviously he wasn't a candidate until 2 seconds ago when we made him one, but he's now out there, so I'm curious. Yeah, I think he might end up getting an interview. I'm not reading anywhere. I'm totally basing that on connecting dots, but we'll see.
Yeah, I don't doubt that either. He's definitely going to get more than one interview, and it's just a matter of where he feels the best fit is going to be. I'm sure somewhere where there's at least some kind of talent already in place.
Yeah. I just got a couple quickies for you. Your two-cent thought on three quick little topics here. First one, your boy, Mike Tannenbaum, is now the general manager of the Miami Dolphins.
Go figure.
Unbelievable.
Usually guys get jobs based on success in other places and whatnot, and for them to hire him, I'm not sure where their angle is with that, but you got an extra
Apparently
Jet GM.
Everyone that's ever left the Jets wants to stay in the AFC East.
That's what I was just getting to. I'm like, you have him who just went to Miami, you got Rex who's reportedly going to Buffalo. Well, who knows what's next?
Unbelievable. Next one. I caught a commercial. I didn't really have the volume on, but I don't know if I've seen this commercial yet, but there's something with, like, Johnny Manziel and like, cheerleaders or something, and And then someone comes in at the end of the show and says something like, you should stick the football, and then he's wearing his jersey again. And what I was thinking, and I'm asking, this is my question to you as the Johnny Football enthusiast, he better get to making his commercials now, like ASAP, because my concern is that this guy's not going to have a football career in 2 or 3 years from now.
Well, I don't know why you say that. This kid hasn't even really had a fair chance yet. Let's see him, what happens
looks
when
like
he gets
a deer in headlights, Andrew.
And he has a season.
He looks like a deer in headlights, and what concerns me is that he's on the verge of how bad he looked this year when he did play towards the end of the year, of losing his mojo, like internally, losing his mojo.
I don't know about that. I just think it's just young and experienced, you know, stuff like that. You know, give him a little bit of time in the right position, some weapons around him. He's going to be just fine.
Hey, man, his weapons are smoking dope. He's got weapons. They're just too busy doing other extracurricular activities. Last one, Jameis Winston.
22 years old.
He's your other boy. How's he going to fare as an NFL quarterback? And does
I didn't
he
hear the name I was saying. You know, who?
I didn't say again. I'm sorry.
I didn't hear the name of the guy you just said.
Oh, I said Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a pretty good pro. It's just a matter of getting his maturity.
He's going to go to the top of the... Andrew?
Yeah.
I didn't hear, do you think he's going to go at the top of the draft?
Yeah, I think he's the best quarterback coming out, definitely. Just a matter of who wants to take a chance on him with his maturity and feel that he's going to grow from that and learn from that stuff.
It's a similar situation. That's why I kind of asked it right after asking about Johnny Football. It's a very similar situation, and you happen to be in love with both. Go figure.
Go figure.
All right, so... All right, you have anything else you want to add to football before we move on and just touch on a couple of things before we kind of let you do what you got to do?
No, I'm good on football right now.
We'll make our picks before we let you go, but I just want to get your quick thought on – actually, you know what? We'll leave that for now.
What was that?
It's loud. All right, it's better. There's been a lot of activity this week around the NBA. Trades all over the place. Pending trade, even trades pending as we speak, I think. There's a couple I want, they kind of go together because there's, you know, the Cavaliers have been very active. The Celtics have been very active. Any of these trades that maybe stick out to you more than the other in terms of ultimate impact, whether you're talking about J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert going to Cleveland, Deion Waiters going to Oklahoma City, and before you answer, I just want to make a point. Actually, no, I'll let you answer first. And then you had Mozgov going to Cleveland for a couple first-round picks, and you had Jeff Green and Tayshaun Prince being swapped. Then you have Brandon Wright going to Phoenix for a first-round pick, who was just received from Dallas when they traded for Rondo. And then you have another trade where I think it's actually part of one of those other trades where Austin Rivers is going to Boston, and it appears that the Clippers are going to go after him to try and get him over there with Daddy. Anyway, a whole bunch of activity. Any of these trades stick out to you as more meaningful than the other, or maybe which one might work out best, or what team stands to benefit most from these deals?
I just think that a lot of these teams are just trying to prep and make some kind of run. I really like the additions that Houston's been making, obviously getting bigger and stronger over there. They never really replaced Chandler Parsons when he left for Dallas. And even with Boston, I'm not really surprised, but once they got rid of Rondo, it seemed like they were just doing a little fire sale and just trying to get rid of a lot of their, I guess, higher-priced guys, bringing some youth and try to rebuild a little bit. So it's always interesting to see how these players, certain players make impacts, because a lot of these guys, most of them are just bench players or role players. Now they come into a team that's like playoff capabilities and their responsibilities are gaining more. So... we got to see how they're all going to fit into place.
Which brings me to my point. Thank you for saying that. Brandon Wright, Tayshaun Prince, Timofey Mozgov, Iman Shumpert, J.R. Smith, Dion Waiters, for the most part, all these guys are role players. Jeff Green. I look at these guys, and I look at Jeff Green, Dion Waiters, even to a certain degree, J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert as being a little better than just your standard bench guy. Andrew, did I lose you?
Nope. Nope. Just changing the phone.
I heard it click. I'm sorry. And so this is the fascinating part of all these maneuvers. Timofey Mozgov was traded to Cleveland for two future first-round picks. Let me say this again. Timofey Mozgov was traded for two future first-round picks. The Celtics traded Brandon Wright to Phoenix for a first-round pick, a protected first-round pick. Also, a first-round pick received, I think, I'm not sure if it was Cleveland, Oklahoma City, received a first-round pick in that three-way trade as well. Somehow, some way, the Knicks managed in that deal to accomplish the receipt of one second-round pick in 2019.
Go figure.
What? It's my belief that in all these trades, the Knicks gave up the most talent. They gave up J.R. Smith and Iman Shumpert, and they received a second-round pick 4 years from now, 5 years from now?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to make any sense.
What the heck is that?
I don't know what they're doing, but the way Phil Jackson said it, he said, you know, he's like, all of this, he said, put on me. This is on me from now on. Starting from here, all these moves that we make and whatnot, judge us from here. So
he also issued a mea culpa, for the record, which is basically an apology that's not meaning of anything. It's just in name only, really. But here's the thing. It's like I know why ultimately they made the trade was to clear the deck. I mean, they received three bench fodder guys in the trade. They waived them all. That being said, they have now re-signed two of them, or maybe even all three, to 10-day deals or whatever, which is garbage. But they waived them all to clear the deck. I mean, they have so much money just to bring in free agents. So next year will look very different. And I hope that Phil's able to attract guys to New York. But I don't know that these kids are going to want to come to New York the way this team is, the way this organization looks right now. They just look like a total abomination, man.
Well, I think the real question is, how much faith do you have in Phil Jackson to be able to put together a winning team, being he's in a position, granted, we know his experience and what he's done in the NBA. Nobody's questioning that. But being he's in a position that he's never been in before, you know, kind of as Bill Parcells says, he's shopping for the groceries and giving them to his team. How much confidence do you have in him that he can actually build a team to have some success around like this from scratch?
You know, I actually do believe he'll be able to do it. I think we're going to have to go through a very rocky period to get there, which is the way life anyway is you have to go through a big struggle to get to the other side. And
right.
I feel like that's what they're going through now, but it's close. And I'll just say this about being able to bring guys in. It has happened. Drew, is your phone moving?
No, sitting in my cup holder.
Okay, yeah, I keep hearing like a weird, like, shrieking noise. If it was anyone else who had this situation where you have this much of a mess, but you'd have all this money, I think they'd have a hard time getting the free agents in there. Only because it's Phil Jackson do I think he'll be able to pull it off.
Yeah, I think so, too. I have a lot of faith in it. What did I tell you a while ago? I told you about J.R. Smith. I said, have some faith. I said, and believe me, I guarantee you he will not be in blue and white when the season's over with. And I don't like to pat myself on the head all the time because I'm not really often right. Unless you're reading the book of Archibald.
We got to give you credit.
I hit that nail right on the head. Yeah, I hit that nail right on the head with that one. So,
I guess my concern was that why would anyone trade for this guy's contract? But somehow, some way, he is gone. And I saw that trade, and the first person I needed to get in touch with was you. I mean, literally, the breaking news had literally just popped up, and it took me like 0.1 second flat because as bad of a trade as it was, and I think there was, I think he did a terrible. I think the trade is look, it looks terrible. Like from a Knicks fan standpoint, they received nothing. It's just a mess, really. But that being said, they did get rid of someone who ultimately was never going to let them win anything, because ultimately he would come up small in a big situation or shoot bricks until the cows come home. And yeah, good riddance. It's unfortunate to see Shumpert go, but good riddance to J.R. Smith, no doubt.
I agree. I hate to lose Shumpert with his defensive prowess, but you know what? He was a chip. He was a piece that was actually valuable. And look at this Knicks roster. They didn't have much valuable pieces to send off to get value in return. So you got to give something to get something in a way.
I got a weird thing to ask you about. In that Dion Waiters trade, he was he wanted to get the number 13 in Oklahoma City. Did you hear about this at all?
Yeah, something about that with Harden's number, and they were like, "No, you don't. We can't give that to you." I don't understand that.
That's what I was going to ask you. Apparently, they are honoring somehow James Harden's number in that clubhouse or something. That
he played 3 years there. He played 3 years.
That
there.
Is really, really disturbing. What? What is that? He. You know, not only that, he left as a free agent, didn't he?
Yeah.
It wasn't like he got traded away, is my point. He chose to leave.
Right.
He's in a Hall of Famer, people. He's in the league freaking 5 years. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, I saw that, and I'm like, what world do we live in that seems very cold, by the way, to two Dion Waiters. If I was Dion Waiters, I'd want to get out of Oklahoma City as fast as I got there. That's so ridiculous.
Yeah. It's a nice move to get to them, you know, but and Waiters is just very inconsistent. I actually like him, but he's just a little bit too inconsistent. And yes, he is a young player. He's a little more time, but I don't know if he has the overall makeup to have success to be a good NBA player. The jury's still out on that.
Who's that, Dion Waiters?
Yeah.
He's actually got a lot of J.R. Smith in him.
Yeah, that's actually a really good comparison. I didn't see that.
He likes to shoot. I think the world of him, but he definitely needs to tone it down a little bit and find his way a little bit. But I think he'll be fine. I think the jury's still out on him. I think he's bought himself a little more time over the last year and 2 years or whatever in getting his feet wet. He had a decent game a couple days ago in his second game in Oklahoma City. So I think the jury's still out, and I think playing with those other guys may help him anyway.
That's the big thing. That's definitely going to help him out. That's a great point.
So yeah, I mean, the NBA has been crazy active. I suppose the big winners in there, we'll know until probably a year or two from now, and we'll see what the Knicks have done by clearing the deck, because they certainly just cleared the deck. I mean, they have $30,000 or so plus to sign two free agents, plus they have a bunch of trade exceptions. So like meaning towards the cap. So they're set up. But I just wonder if they can get the right pieces in.
They've already ruined my winter. The Jets ruined my fall and early part of the winter. And you know, usually after football season, if the Jets are so pitiful, I at least have my Knicks to bounce back on. But as you're fully aware this year, what are they, 5-35 now? And last night during the game, and going into the fourth quarter, Craig, it was 96-48 they were losing going into the fourth quarter. It's pathetic.
Well, they literally look like a D League roster at this point, and
a D League roster is better than this team.
Andrew, they have lost 15 straight games. They are 5-35, and if I didn't know any better, this team may end up being the worst in history.
Easily.
And honestly, I love Carmelo Anthony, but sometimes he does some stupid things, and his desire to play in the All Star game is stupid. Dude. Sit your ass down, don't step on the court another minute this year, and get healthy. Because I don't want to deal with this every year for the next 4 years when they're trying to get better and they have better guys on the team.
And that's what I don't understand either, man. They're talking about shutting him down. He's got a knee injury. He may need surgery or whatnot. You know what? Why? You know this season is a dead season already, so why not just sit out, get the
shut
surgery now to be proactive
down.
About it, and then you rehab, and you're back more than enough time for the start of training camp next year. Like, why wouldn't you do that? I don't understand that.
That's what I'm saying. You and I are speaking the same thing here. It seems senseless. They're not going to rally from a 5-35 record to make the playoffs. They're not going to win. They're not going to win 40 straight games. It's not going to happen. So let's just move on. It's obvious what they're doing. It's no surprise. You know, there's nothing left there. There's nothing to salvage. Just move on. And honestly, by the way, the next guy that has to go, I don't care if they pull a Josh Smith on him and just cut him. And I've been saying it literally since the moment they brought him in, and I've been nothing but right with this one, is Bart Bargnani. Get rid of this guy in the stupid contract. They gave him a stupid contract. They gave J.R. Smith a stupid contract. Smith's contract is still there, and now they need to get rid of Bargnani's because he is awful also, and he's always hurt.
I couldn't agree more with that. The guy is a waste of space and a waste of salary cap money, and he's not even playing, so you can't even say he's part of the misery.
Well, but that's part of the problem, is he's not playing because he's always hurt.
That's
and even when they think he's good enough to come back, he comes back for literally like a quarter of basketball and re-injures himself. I mean, come on, man.
Yeah.
Enough's enough.
We don't need that. Yeah, we don't
need
that.
How many guys like that do you want on your team? They have it with Carmelo right now. They have it with Amari. I mean, come on.
Yep. We're preaching to the choir,
anyway,
brother.
We could beat up on them all day. Last thing I want to ask you about, and then we'll do Players of the Week and Game Picks, and you can get off. We'll leave the Hall of Fame stuff for next week when we have a little more time.
Okay.
Last thing I want to ask you about is UFC heavyweight champion John Jones beat Danielle Cormier last week, as we briefly discussed on the show, and a day or two later, he had been drug tested before the fight. I don't know when it was, and there was some benzo something. It's basically some sort of amphetamine that is like an active ingredient in cocaine or something like that in his system. And had to go to and check himself into a drug rehab facility. I haven't heard anything as far as I think he was tested after the fight, and I don't know if the results are out yet, if it played a role in the fight or not. I guess the question here is bigger than just fighting. It's just, when will these sports superstars wake up and understand the fact that they are literally, this is almost Alex Rodriguez-esque, in my opinion, because you're talking about a guy with all the talent in the world.
I agree. It was mind-boggling when I heard that story, and obviously the first person I thought of, but, yeah, he won that fight, right?
He was a 5-round fight, up to 3 rounds. It was a very close fight, and then he dominated the championship rounds, 4th and 5th rounds, and it was won 49.
Yeah,
he won 4 rounds by decision.
It would be more of an issue. That's just almost my train of thought. It is surprising to see guys still make stupid mistakes like that. And you got to wonder. I mean, it was something. I read the article. It said it was actually cocaine itself. I didn't know it was the latter, as you had mentioned, something that had the ingredients or whatever the terminology used.
Yeah, it's something. The way it read was it was either one of the main ingredients in cocaine. I wish I could pronounce it. But the first bunch of letters in the word is benzo something peen at the end of it. One of these long names or whatever. So I'm assuming it's some sort of amphetamine type thing because it's similar to cocaine or in cocaine. But the point is, I just don't get why these larger than life superstars in terms of their respective sports, what part of that success can't you keep your head on straight enough to just do the right thing off the field of play, so to speak? I guess it's just sad that this is happening to another guy. I mean, I don't know where this all leads, but I guess it's just sad.
It's sad that these guys still actually take these risks, these major risks, to put everything on the line, their careers, their endorsements, their money, everything like that, all because they want to get hired, something like that. And I'm not judging anybody. I'm not, you know, Mr. Perfect in the world. You know that. We all have our own vices. But if you have a profession where you get paid to be a special athlete, you know you have role models and stuff look up to you and whatnot, why would you even risk the opportunity of having that all crumble down or just having that attached to your name, period? You know, I just never can wrap my head around why guys constantly take the risk to do something to jeopardize their career. And it's even worse so when you hear about repeat offenders, guys that get caught often and often do the same things over and over again. Why are they still getting second, third, fourth chances? It's amazing to me, bro. I'll never understand why guys do that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. It's bizarre, and I'll tell you what, his behavior has been bizarre, like leading into the cage and stuff. And I swear, man, if I didn't know any better, it kind of adds up now.
Yeah,
you know, this erratic, like overly enthusiastic, maybe behavior. Maybe you know, 1 + 1 = 2 here. Maybe.
Yeah. I could see that. It still sucks, and it's a shame. It's sad. It sucks for the sport, too, because they've gotten a lot more popular, the UFC, obviously, and John Bones is definitely a household name.
He's
inside that ring, so.
He's the biggest guy in the sport, dude. It's the same thing as if this happened to LeBron James or
gotcha.
Kobe Bryant. To his respective sport, it's the same thing.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, seriously.
He's in rehab. Is he suspended from fighting? Like, when can he be eligible to fight again? Is there anything listed down on that, or we have to wait further?
They're waiting. There's nothing yet because they want to see. There's no results of what happened. In or around the time of the fight last weekend, they haven't gotten those results back yet. So I suppose once that comes out, then we'll the UFC will make some sort of ruling or whatever, and we'll see from there. I don't think they're going to do anything until he gets out of the treatment facility and they know more of the situation.
All right.
Anyhow. Drew, it's 9:26 a.m. I know you have a game to get to, so let's do our game picks and our players of the week and wrap her up. So let's do our game picks first. Actually, let's not. Let's do our players of the week. I'm going to let you go first.
Come on. Freaking idiot in front of me driving. Mine's going to be short and sweet, man. I'm actually going with the team style because I am utterly impressed, and there's nobody stopping this team going to the Super Bowl. But the Seattle defense yesterday, what they were able to do, 2 interceptions, 1 return, 90 yards for a touchdown by Cam Chancellor. I mean, this team is in full form, repeat mode like they were last year, and I'd be so scared to play this team going forward. They're gelling on all cylinders, and I can't say enough good things about them. So Seattle Seahawks are my team player of the week.
Nice and short and sweet. You know, I sent you a text message earlier today trying to get a gauge on what I was going to use here. And I wasn't sure, and I just decided I'm going to go with a 1A and a 1B because I just feel like it warrants it. I'm going to go with the two quarterbacks yesterday, two of the best leaders in their sport, no doubt about it, and that's Russell Wilson of the Seahawks and Tom Terrific of the Patriots. He was not going to be denied yesterday. They've been referring to him as Cheetah, apparently, because of his ridiculous speed. Clearly that's a joke, but he did have a rushing touchdown yesterday, Tom Brady, to go along with 367 yards passing, 3 touchdowns to 1 interception, and the 1 touchdown on the ground, and leading his team and having them come from behind to victory. And then in the other game, Russell Wilson went 15-22, very efficient, for 268, and 3 touchdowns, and also running for 22 more on the ground, both leading their team to victory, both just unbelievable quarterbacks in this league at this point. Specifically, I'm more impressed, I guess, by Russell Wilson because of everything, all the challenges he has in playing the position in this league in the first place. But those are my players of the week, Russell Wilson and Tom Brady. You have the Seattle defense, led by Mr. Chancellor over there, and today's games, we have the early game is my favorite team, the Dallas Cowboys, going up to Lambeau Field in Green Bay. God, Andrew.
Tough game, man. It really is. But like I said to you earlier, I'm going to stick with the Packers being at home. I'm going to assume that Aaron Rodgers is 100% healthy, and we're going to see nothing but typical Aaron Rodgers today. Neither one of these teams have a defense that impresses me at all. But like I said, in this doubt, I'll go with the home team. I know it's going to be cold. There's going to be no precipitation or anything like that. And obviously the Packers and Aaron Rodgers are very accustomed and used to playing in these types of conditions. So a score, though, damn it. I know it's going to be a high-scoring game to some effect. I'm going to go with the Packers 34-30.
You know, and they haven't I believe this is us Cowboy visit to Lambeau Field in the playoffs since the Ice Bowl.
Yeah, 67.
And it's going to be cold. But I do think it's going to be high scoring, and I got a classic coming down here. I'm like I said, I think this is a last possession game, and I got the Cowboys overcoming the challenge of going to Lambeau and maintaining their perfect record on the road this year and winning 31-30.
No surprise. Well, my real interest is going to be next season, the first time the Giants play the Cowboys. I wonder who you're going to be rooting for in that game. I guess we'll have to find out next year.
You are such a piece of, you know what, I can't even wait.
Just can't wait. I'm so intrigued.
In the late game, we have the Indianapolis Colts visiting the Peyton Manning-led Denver Broncos. Who you got there, Mr. Marchetti?
Well, even more so now the fact that Tom Brady and the Patriots did their part yesterday and advanced and won. I think I'm going to go with the home team today. Nothing against Andrew Luck and them. Like I said to you, I really wanted to pick them, but I just think Peyton's too loaded. He's too healthy now with the week off. Demaryius Thomas is 100% healthy. That defense got healthy over the break. And I think they're going to roll today. It's going to be 42-31 Broncos.
42-31?
31, I'll give them 30 points.
All right, so last week you went 1-3 with your pick. So far this week you're 0-2. Feel better about today?
Thanks for the reminder. Thanks for the reminder. Although my office pool, that went 2-0 yesterday, so I don't know how I do that. I guess the spread.
Well, yeah, I was going to say the games were closed. Yeah, yeah. Oh, you're doing an office pool for playoffs? That's cool.
Yeah, they have it in there. We already, it's part of the season package.
Awesome. Yeah, our season package doesn't do that. We just do the regular season and it's done.
That's why my office pool is cooler than yours.
I think we've had this conversation, but I got my office pool from you somehow. I don't even know. From my brother, I should say. But, So I got in the late game. I'm taking Denver also. I think it's going to be a high-scoring game. I think it'll be a doozy. I got Denver winning by a touchdown, 34-27.
All right. Well, that's interesting because I really – not that I thought you would have picked the Colts, but you are an Andrew Luck guy, and you always seem to be high on him. He's had an MVP type of season. Is this going to be a close game where they lose late, or is this going to be something that Denver pretty much maintains the whole game?
If Indianapolis doesn't get up early in the game, I think Denver will not dominate, but kind of cruise. Like I think they'll maintain a touchdown or two lead throughout the game sort of situation. I don't think it'll be a blowout or anything, and it could be close. But I think if it's going to be close or the Colts have a shot, they have to take a lead early. They have to.
Yeah, and no turnovers.
And if that
Luck.
Happens, then I would be paying attention to the game even more so because that's going to make for a much greater game if the Colts can get up early. And
yeah.
I really hope Reggie Wayne has a game today because he did nothing for me in this thing last week, and I left him in there, and I decided not to change him, as we kind of discussed yesterday. Giving the transaction, I figured that game will have plenty of points. He'll have a couple of opportunities, and hopefully he makes a couple.
All right. Well, we're going to find out sooner than later. That's the late game today at 4:30.
Big day for Reggie Wayne.
Let's go. I finished for you, pal.
Thanks, buddy. That's going to bring us pretty much to our conclusion here. Drew, I know you got to go. Anything else you want to mention or shout out or anything before you get off?
No, just have a good weekend. Enjoy the games. Be safe, everybody. And, we're going to have, after all this time, 17 weeks, we're going to be down to the final four teams in 1 week from now. Who are they going to be? We will find out. Dun, dun, dun.
In the next shocking conclusion of Eastlake Sports, we will tell you.
All right, partner, good stuff.
Yeah, man. Championship Sunday next weekend. We will be talking again then. Good luck today, and I'll take care of wrapping up the show.
Thanks, partner, as always. You the man. Best partner in show business. I would not want to have anybody else in your shoes. Thanks again,
Thanks,
bro.
Drew.
Good see luck you later, today. Partner. Thank
yep.
you.
And as we conclude the show here, so, yeah, big day around the NFL yesterday, big day, even bigger day today, getting one step closer to finding out who's playing in the Super Bowl on February, is that the 1st, I think, this year? It's the 1st. Yeah, it's the, yep, February the 1st, Super Bowl Sunday, getting closer. Yesterday was ridiculous with these quarterbacks and two big-name quarterbacks going, or four big-name quarterbacks, I should say, going against each other today. And we'll definitely be breaking that down next week, as well as the conference championship games, as well as getting into a little bit of the Hall of Fame talk in the major league, in the major leagues in baseball, as well as a couple other things going on there. And obviously getting much into NBA and football and maybe some hockey and some other things as well. We hope everyone's New Year is off to a great start. It's about 9:35. We're going to end the show early today. We hope everyone enjoys their divisional round, NFL Sunday, and the rest of their weekend. And we'll be back next week, likely at our regular scheduled hour of 10 a.m., rather than this excessively early Sunday morning show, which we thank you for joining us. This has been Eastlake Sports Round 118. Find us on Twitter under hashtag ELS, as well as our Facebook Eastlake Sports fan page. Check that out. Hit the old like button. Check out future and past podcasts on iTunes on the Sports Jam Network. Follow my partner on Twitter, Andrew Marchetti, at ArchieMoses24. You can follow me, Craig Goldberger, on Twitter at 4_TheGolden1. And enjoy your Sunday today and come back next week for another round of Eastlake Sports. Have a great day, everyone. Take care. Bye-bye. We are out.